listening area and around the country.
Join us at Calicoon Hills September 30th. Ticket information at wjffradio.org.
Support for WJFF Radio Catskill comes from the Calicoon Farmers Market, Calicoon Creek Park, serving local needs every Sunday and accepting pre-orders at calicoonfarmersmarket.org. From Forthright Cider, Youngsville, ciders and mead crafted with locally sourced ingredients, supporting community charities with a portion of sales through the Solidarity Cider Program. ForthrightCYDER.com. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Welcome to the local edition, local news and information to keep you connected in the Catskills and also in Northeast Pennsylvania. I'm your host, Jason Dole. And because it's Monday, this is the first of five local editions you'll get this week. We're here Monday through Friday at this time. Coming up on the program, we'll be checking in with Betty Blau about a new art show that's opening up at Nanette and Friends Gallery in Barrieville. We will be speaking with the artist. But first, because it is Monday, here on the local edition on Mondays, we check in with the Sullivan County government, find out what's happening in the county and from its many different divisions and entities and efforts going on. Well, last July, July 2020, Sullivan County saw a record number of children in foster care. Radio Catskill's Patricio Rubio spoke to Danielle Mann, Director of Social Services, and Doreen Colon, Family Engagement Coordinator for Sullivan County, about this situation, what it means now that New York expanded its eligibility on who can foster.
So 138 children was our highest in Sullivan County's history back in July 2020. I'm not really sure about the explanation, to be honest, of how we got there, but over the last year, we've done kind of some tremendous work in foster care to really get that number down. We're actually down to 110 right now. One of the things that we did to kind of reduce the number of children in care is that we've tried to really move them through our spectrum of services a little more aggressively, because we wanted to really evaluate where all the children were placed and what we were doing. Did they need to be there? What was going on with the family? And one of the things we started doing, you know, is having a weekly meeting that always includes myself and the commissioner and the deputy commissioner, with staff rotating in and out. And we review these cases, and we've just really been on it. And, trying to move the children and have them achieve permanency much quicker, rather than kind of let them linger in the system.
Right, right. I mean, one of the things I know of, I'm always hearing about foster care, is the lack of foster care, I guess, homes that are available in Sullivan County. Has that gotten better, that situation? Are there more people coming out willing to be foster parents or guardians?
So, yes, that was another thing that over the last year we spent a lot of time trying to recruit. We did that with our contractor, Children's Home of Wyoming Conference. They've really done a lot to kind of do recruiting and training in conjunction with our staff. That has actually been a good thing with the pandemic, is that there were people that were working from home where they necessarily in the past not have been able to attend our training. We were doing it virtually, and more people were able to attend. So what was happening is we're actually getting people from different backgrounds where, you know, different careers, they're working from home. They just have a little bit more opportunity now. So we increased our homes by 67%. We increased from, you know, from like 36 homes to 60. I think we're at 61 right now, actually. So it just puts us in a much better spot than we were in the past, with having more homes that are available to our youth, so that we can keep them here in Sullivan County rather than having to send them to other agencies, outside counties, different areas of the state even. So we've done a lot with that.
Now, the county is working to grow another model. I heard the kinship approach to foster care. How is that model different from a traditional foster family approach?
So now that we've done a lot with recruiting for the local foster homes, our next push was to, I'm sorry about the phone here. So yes, we really tried to do a lot with our next step is to really try to push for kinship care. And I'll let, you know, Doreen kind of speak to that. But basically that is, you know, if you, we want to really educate, you know, if you wanted to be a foster parent, what that is, right? But maybe you're not in a position that you're able to do that right now, but you have a, I want to have people have more of an awareness as to what kinship is. So that would be, you know, if something were to come up with a family member, like a niece or nephew, or a friend of one of your children, or somebody that you've coached in any sport, or somebody at, you know, maybe at your church or anything like that, if they were to have a need to be into foster care, then at that point you could become a kinship resource for them. So I'm going to let Doreen kind of
turn. Your man, please dial 233.
I'm going to let Doreen talk about that.
2336.
So Patricio, anyone, when a child is has to be removed from a home due to safety reasons, imminent safety issues, you know, the first thing the department does is contact relatives or fictive kin. And again, as Danielle said, fictive kin can be a neighbor, family, friend, school staff, someone that the child has had and or the family has had a significant relationship or connection to. And so we reach out to them and just, you know, inquire about their interest about, you know, being resources. When relatives express an interest in being a resource, then we sit down with them and we go over all the pros and cons of the different placement options. So there's the kinship foster care versus traditional. Traditional foster care would be considered when there is no relative or fictive kin resource available. So we then sit down with our relative and then we go over the placement options again, whether it be kinship foster care or filing for temporary custody. So each of the different options have, again, there's pros and cons depending on what the specific family you know, prefers.
But how do you determine if a kinship placement might be a better option for them than traditional way?
Well, we do a whole like pre-assessment. So a relative expresses they're interested. We do a whole pre-assessment. And then if that relative is suitable, if there are no major background issues and their home is appropriate and this is what they want to do after the petition is filed in family court, then we can emergency certify them. So if they decide they want to be a kinship resource, they have to go through a kinship foster care resource. They have to go through like the typical licensing requirements that a traditional foster family would have to undergo. But one of the differences is that we can emergency certify them while they are completing the requirements so that this child can then remain with that relative resource or fictive kin while they are completing the requirements to be fully approved as a kinship licensed home.
And how long does that process take?
We have 60 days, and then the state allows for an extension based on different things.
In the past, only close family members were eligible to foster through the kinship foster programs. But in 2019, then Governor Cuomo signed the Kid Care Bill, which expanded who can step up. Who is newly eligible?
And again, eligible, they did extend the definition. So now it is anyone who has a significant connection with the child.
So it doesn't necessarily mean they have to be a blood relative.
Correct.
So that does expand the options for these children to find homes.
Right. So that's what we're talking about now is we have a really good amount of locally certified foster homes now, but our next push is to really just educate people on this because, you know, like I said, maybe you're not ready to be a foster parent, but you always have it in the back of your mind. And, you know, God forbid something happened with one of my son or my daughter's friend and they were going to end up in foster care. You know, I could then be, you know, since I have a relationship with that child, I could then be a kinship resource for that child, even though we're not blood related.
Part of the impetus for expanding foster families' kinship placements is an upcoming deadline for the First Family Prevention Services Act. In 2018, the act created stricter guidelines for the types of foster placements can receive federal funds. When is that deadline? What is changing? And is Sullivan County on track?
So yes, we are. So it's going to be effective September 29th, 2021, which is right around the corner. So there's a lot of different requirements. One of the things that the state is pushing with this is that we're reducing the number of congregate care. So congregate care is anybody that's in a higher level. So anything outside of basically a family home, like a group home setting or a residential treatment center, which would be, you know, they're living on a campus type setting where they're going to school and they're living in the same area. We do have children placed in those facilities, but the state is really, with Family First, is really pushing to reduce that. So part of the what I was talking about earlier about the reviewing that we're doing every week is really making sure that we're not having any child placed in a level that they don't need to be in, and that we're working through the different levels of care. We've actually reduced, we've done a lot in the last year with that as well. I think last July we had 22 children that were in one of those higher levels of care, the congregate care, and we're down to 13. So we're constantly reviewing, and we're able to do that now because of the local foster homes. So, you know, before where we had, only a handful of homes, we weren't able to really match where these youth should be. And with more options, you know, people coming from different backgrounds, maybe they'll be a little bit more able to deal with certain behaviors or different types of tasks and disabilities. You know, we're just have more of options available rather than having to put them in a higher level of care.
Right, right. Well, definitely. Now, if someone's listening to this and wants to become a foster parent or wants to get involved in some capacity, what can they do?
They can go to the Sullivan County website, has a lot of information. There's actually a foster care tab. When you first get to the Sullivan County website on the bottom right, I believe there's a little tab just for foster care. So they can go there and that has all the contact information. Mike Osipowitz is our home finder for foster care. And his direct line is 845-513-2389. And he's our out of our foster care unit, and he's our home binder that does the training and the certification.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Before we go, is anything else that we have not touched on that you want our listeners to know about?
There's always a need. I mean, we're never going to have too many foster homes. Let's just put it that way. There's always a need. So, you know, even if it's something that people are not considering right now, but they want to just have information ready for when they are, you know, ready to do this, there's always a need.
Thank you so much. We were talking to Danielle Mann, Director of Social Services, and Doreen Colon, Family Engagement Coordinator for Sullivan County. And we're talking about foster care and its current situation is foster care in Sullivan County. Again, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Patricio. Take care.
For Radio Catskill, I'm Patricio Rubio.
This is Radio Catskills Local Edition. We're only halfway through the program. When we come back, we'll have our next live guest speaking to an artist who has an exhibit that's opening up in Berryville. Stay tuned for more Local Edition.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Food is a great connector, and each week on our show, we bring you stories that exemplify the ways food can connect us to each other and our communities. From serious issues like mental health, sustainability, and food waste on one hand, to the really practical things like getting the best tortillas or learning to forage for food, food is at the center of all of our conversations. That's The Splendid Table from APM, American Public Media.
At its new time, Sunday morning at 11.
The pandemic is bringing big changes to how you'll visit a Disney theme park.
The way you have to handle going to a Disney park has completely changed.
Jason Cochran explains what's new at Disney World. And Cecily Wong looks at quirky food traditions around the world.
You know, they're eating insects all over the world. And if I'm honest, I think we're going to be eating insects very soon.
On the next Travel with Rick Steves.
Tuesday afternoon at 2 on Radio Catskill. The Radio Catskill Community Awards, honoring our healthcare heroes for making a difference, including Sullivan 180.
Because Sullivan County consistently ranks at the bottom of the health rankings, we're currently 60 out of 62. We're engaging children and youth so that they can play a role in helping to turn around the county's health rankings.
Join us at Calicoon Hills September 30th. Ticket information at wjffradio.org.
Welcome back to the Local Edition. News and information that's keeping you connected in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. And we're going to turn our attention to a corner of the Sullivan County Catskills. It's right on the cusp of Northeast Pennsylvania, right there on the river. Coming up on October 2nd, which sounds like next month, but it's this weekend. There's a new art show opening at the Nanetta and Friends Gallery in Berryville, New York. Nana Hall opened Nanetta and Friends, which is also a ceramic studio offering classes and pottery for sale back in 2019. It was also imagined as a space where artists could gather and draw inspiration from each other and also exhibit. Now, this show starts October 2nd, runs through the end of the month. It's an example of just that, featuring photos, paintings, mixed media by art, by photographer and artist Betty Blau, and she's on the phone with us right now. Betty, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing good. And so, so this is Nanette and Friends. It's a place where for artists to exhibit, also to get inspired. And your photos and paintings and mixed media, this show, some of it was inspired by ceramics at Nanette and Friends?
Yeah, well, I know Nona, and I took a couple of classes with her, and we became friends, and I talked about my paintings. And she came over and said we decided to do a show together, and she made ceramics, came back about a month later with ceramics that she was inspired by my work. And that, in turn, inspired me. So we've gone back and forth with one another, creating art that is inspired by one another. I guess that's the best way for me to describe it.
So, well, and I mean, that's kind of what happens with art, I think, in all the creative enterprises in the big picture. Everybody's always influencing each other. But now this is happening. It's a fairly tight circuit. It's happening right there at this home location for you.
Yes. And I have not been, I've been in the art world, I've been in the commercial art world for years. So this is reconnecting to my roots and my education to be able to paint and photograph creatively as opposed to for jobs. So this has been really a great exercise for me.
Is this a transition for you from more commercial art into, you know, exhibiting your own work?
Yes, it's definitely a transition. I still work as a tabletop stylist and a commercial photographer. But when I think about my career, I realize that I've been painting with objects. That's kind of what my career has been, because being a tabletop stylist, I'm always looking for texture and shape and form. And this, so it was almost a natural transition after art school studying painting to go into that, to make money and to do that. So this is kind of bringing me back to things that I really love. And yeah, I believe it is a transition for me.
The name of the show is called Remains. And as I hear what you were just saying there, I'm imagining, though I could be wrong, I'm imagining that maybe some of these remains are, if you're a, you know, a tabletop artist, maybe in your work, there were things that got left off of the table. And maybe that's what you're paying some more attention to now.
Yeah, I think in nature and in objects, I always love to flea market and tag sale and yard sale, et cetera. And I love old ephemera. I love old papers. I love what's left behind. I love going somewhere, opening a box and seeing the treasures of history. And I love going out into the woods and seeing mushroom spore prints and pine cones that are worn and just everything for me, what's been left behind, what remains, the decay, the natural decay.
And how do
I kind of love that?
and I appreciate that aesthetic too. I'm wondering how all those remaining elements come together. In what way do they come together as a whole for an exhibit like this?
Well, most of the pieces are collages with rubbings and old paper, wasp nests, leaves, but you don't really know that they're wasp nests or leaves, mushroom spore prints. And then what I would like to do when we're setting up this week, I'm going to create a kind of styled world around these paintings and these photographs. So it's going to be a little bit unusual. And of course, incorporate known as incredible ceramics in the space.
Which is my next question. Which is so. What is there in Nona's ceramic work that connects with this area of interest for you and the work you're doing?
I would say the color, and most of all the form. Nona has a magnificent line of commercial work that she sells, and this is just a little bit of a departure. In her tone, the texture is very, very matte. The bottles are very organic shaped. So it just kind of blends and works together with the images that I've been working on.
And Betty, can I ask you, where are you based? Like, where are you working out of primarily right now?
I'm in Barrieville.
So you...
We built a small studio attached to our house. Oddly, right when the pandemic hit, we had been talking about it for quite a while. So we ended up getting it done. And it's been really, that part of it has been somewhat great for us because I've been able to get in the studio and really work.
That was kind of why I was asking. I was wondering to what extent recent events, both global events and events in your life, led you to this point where you're finding your way back to fine art.
Massive global events. Yes, without a doubt. I would say that has definitely brought me back to my fine art. Yeah.
You know, this is something that all, again, artists, visual artists, but also, musicians, people in the creative arts, there's always that struggle to balance between your creativity and then your ability to make a living from it. And sometimes there's the commercial side versus the fine art side, or there's your passion versus the job that you have to do to keep that passion going. What advice would you give to other artists and other people who've had like an artistic passion at one time, but let it fall to the wayside? I guess even if they aren't like artists, even just regular people will do that. Have a passion in something, but you got to focus on the nuts and bolts for a while, but then finding your way back to the art. What advice would you give them?
You know, it's interesting. I think the advice I would give is to, even if you find a moment to express yourself, whether it's writing in a journal, whether it's getting a sketch pad and drawing, whether it's, you know, I'm not a musician, so I don't want to use a musical analogy at all, but so I can only talk visual. But I think it's just taking those moments so you stay connected to it, because life changes and things get altered and there will be a time to reconnect. But if you just stay with it, just hold on to it, I think that's a really, really good thing to do. Even in the most minute way, it keeps you connected. And also, of course, always see art, go hear music, always get inspired by people and everything around you, because the inspiration is just everywhere.
So if you can't do art in the present in your life as a primary thing, make sure you're doing it in some capacity, but then also make sure you're engaging with it.
I would say, and when I say do it in some capacity, even I'm talking about a little sketchbook, you know, writing something. And I can't really even tell you that during those years of raising my kids and styling and shooting that I was doing that, but it was always in my mind and I was always going to see art and trying to keep up with things that I loved that I didn't have a lot of time for.
On the other side of the coin, I mean, here we're talking about the things that you do until you got time to do what you want. But to what extent did the work that you did commercially inform your fine art sensibilities? Is there positive things that you took from that become part of your whole expression?
Without a doubt. And I think when I started styling, I really thought to myself, oh, this will be my creative outlet. This will be my creative outlet. And there were jobs that were incredibly, and still are, incredibly creative. It got me going to flea markets. It got me searching, you know, obviously on the internet you can find amazing amounts of things. I really went out of my way to find that object, find those things that really were inspiring to me. And I kept going with it, creating beautiful light, interesting angles, finding objects, painting with the objects, really, is what I tried to do to keep myself creative.
Did you have, like, a pile or, like, a chest or a room full of things that you were finding and holding on to for this moment?
Oh, yeah. I did.
So I did.
We were in a very small apartment in New York City. I figured something out there, and now we've got a little shed outside. I've got things pretty organized, and a lot is hanging in the walls in my studio, for sure.
So I guess since that might be the third prong of the advice. The first one is whatever you're doing, keep that creative spark going and do a little bit of your own creative work. Make sure you engage with the work of others and with those people making that work. And I guess this third prong that's starting to emerge, my words, not yours. Don't be afraid to do a little bit of hoarding. Get a little bit of that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But not too much.
Not too much. No. Okay, so the show is called again Remains.
Remains.
We're speaking with the artist. It's Betty Blau, and the show will be at Nonetta and Friends, which is a pottery studio, and the pottery is part of this as well. It's a gift shop, art gallery in Barrieville. It's still fairly new.
She has a beautiful space in the front of the studio for art.
Any other information that people need to know if they're going to go? Is there an opening reception?
Yes, there's a reception, opening reception this Saturday between 3 and 6 p.m. 3 and 6 p.m., October 2nd. The address is 16 Old Brook Road in Barrieville. Laura Silverman from the Outside Institute will be making wonderful cocktails, and it should be a really beautiful afternoon.
Okay, well, thanks, Betty. I want to thank you so much for joining us ahead of the opening of your exhibit, Remains, which will be running from this Saturday through the end of the month of October at Nonetta and Friends. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Take care now.
Well, there you go. That's how we keep you connected in the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania right here on Radio Catskill. We do it with the local edition. Nuts and bolts information from Sullivan County and real artistic conversation about the creative people living in our community and how you can be creative too. Come back tomorrow. We're going to do it all over again. That's it for this program. We'll be back tomorrow at 6:30. Remember, if you missed any of this episode, you can find us online at wjffradio.org, wjffradio.org. You can sign up for the local edition podcast from Radio Catskill, wherever you get podcasts from. I'm Jason Dole. I want to thank you so much for listening.
Hello, my name is John Gordon, and I host a music show right here on WJFF called Ramble Tamble. It airs every Thursday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. I love music, and I play all kinds of different music. That's Ramble Tamble, Thursday night, 7 to 9, right here on WJFF.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Sun River Health, providing accessible health care at over 40 community locations across the Hudson Valley, New York City, and Long Island. The care you need, the respect you deserve. SunRiver.org.
Support comes from the Homestead School, Montessori education, preschool through early college with campuses in Glens Bay and Hurleyville. Building the intelligence, creativity, connection, and skills for an ecological future since 1978. HomesteadSchool.com.
On the next Bioneers, So the Blue New Deal, I think, is a place where the food movement, the agricultural movement can rally behind, and let's match the energy around the Green New Deal and the vision on agriculture, but let's do it underwater too.
We take a deep dive with regenerative ocean farmer Bren Smith into a breakthrough so transformative that it could remake agriculture from the bottom of the ocean on The Bioneers.
Monday night at 10 on Radio Catskill.
That is coming up at 10 o'clock. We got a lot of great programs on your Monday night lineup. Coming up, of course, at 8, it's 51%, followed